wondered if maybe she'd gone to Stone Manor without him. There was a beep. "Hi, it's David." He paused, unsure what to say. One of the things he hated about answering machines was that, if you stop to think, they cut you off. "Sorry I didn't call," he blurted just in time. He wondered if he should tell her what was going on. He thought better of it. "Call Commander Strathmore. He'll explain everything." Becker's heart was pounding. This is absurd, he thought. "I love you," he added quickly and hung up. Becker waited for some traffic to pass on Avenida Borbola. He thought about how Susan undoubtedly would have assumed the worst. It was unlike him not to call when he'd promised to. Becker stepped out onto the four-lane boulevard. "In and out," he whispered to himself. "In and out." He was too preoccupied to see the man in wire-rimmed glasses watching from across the street. Chapter 18. Standing before the huge plate-glass window in his Tokyo skyrise, Numataka took a long pull on his cigar and smiled to himself. He could scarcely believe his good fortune. He had spoken to the American again, and if all was going according to the timetable, Ensai Tankado had been eliminated by now, and his copy of the passkey had been confiscated. It was ironic, Numataka thought, that he himself would end up with Ensai Tankado's passkey. Tokugen Numataka had met Tankado once many years ago. The young programmer had come to Numatech Corp fresh out of college searching for a job. Numataka had denied him. There was no question that Tankado was brilliant, but at the time there were other considerations. Although Japan was changing, Numataka had been trained in the old school. He lived by the code of Menboku, honor and face. Imperfection was not to be tolerated. If he hired a cripple, he would bring shame on his company. He had disposed of Tankado's resume without a glance. Numataka checked his watch again. The American, North Dakota, should have called by now. Numataka felt a tinge of nervousness. He hoped nothing was wrong. If the passkeys were as good as promised, they would unlock the most sought-after product of the computer age. A totally invulnerable digital encryption algorithm. Numataka could embed the algorithm in tamper-proof, spray-sealed VSLI chips and mass-market them to world computer manufacturers, governments, industries, and perhaps even the darker markets. The black market of world terrorists. Numataka smiled. It appeared, as usual, that he'd found favor with the Shichigo-san, the seven deities of good luck. Numatech Corp. was about to control the only copy of Digital Fortress that would ever exist. $20 million was a lot of money, but considering the product, it was the steal of the century. Chapter 19. "What if someone else is looking for the ring?" Susan asked, suddenly nervous. "Could David be in danger?" Strathmore shook his head. "Nobody else knows the ring exists. That's why I sent David. I wanted to keep it that way. Curious spooks don't usually tail Spanish teachers." "He's a professor," Susan corrected, immediately regretting the clarification. Every now and again, Susan got the feeling David wasn't good enough for the commander, that he thought somehow she could do better than a schoolteacher. "Commander," she said, moving on, "if you briefed David by car phone this morning, someone could have intercepted the..." "One in a million shot," Strathmore interrupted, his tone reassuring. "Any eavesdropper had to be in the immediate vicinity and know exactly what to listen for." He put his hand on her shoulder. "I would never have sent David if I thought it was dangerous." He smiled. "Trust me. Any sign of trouble, and I'll send in the pros." Strathmore's words were punctuated by the sudden sound of someone pounding on the Node 3 glass. Susan and Strathmore turned. Sysek Phil Chartruckian had his face pressed against the pane and was pounding fiercely, straining to see through. Whatever he was excitedly mouthing was not audible through the soundproofed glass. He looked like he'd seen a ghost. "What the hell is Chartruckian doing here?" Strathmore growled. "He's not on duty today." "Looks like trouble," Susan said. "He probably saw the run monitor." "God damn it," the commander hissed. "I specifically called the scheduled SysSec last night and told him not to come in." Susan was not surprised. Canceling a SysSec duty was irregular, but Strathmore undoubtedly had wanted privacy in the dome. The last thing he needed was some paranoid SysSec blowing the lid off Digital Fortress. "We better abort Translator," Susan said. "We can reset the run monitor and tell Phil he was seeing things." Strathmore appeared to consider it, then shook his head. "Not yet. Translator is 15 hours into this attack. I want to run it a full 24, just to be sure." This made sense to Susan. Digital Fortress was the first ever use of a rotating clear text function. Maybe Tankado had overlooked something. Maybe Translator would break it after 24 hours. Somehow Susan doubted it. "Translator keeps running," Strathmore resolved. "I need to know for sure this algorithm is untouchable." Chartruckian continued pounding on the pane. "Here goes nothing," Strathmore groaned. "Back me up." The commander took a deep breath and then strode to the sliding glass doors. The pressure plate on the floor activated, and the doors hissed open. Chartruckian practically fell into the room. "Commander, sir, I'm sorry to bother you, but the run monitor, I ran a virus probe and..." "Phil, Phil, Phil," the commander gushed pleasantly, as he put a reassuring hand on Chartruckian's shoulder. "Slow down. What seems to be the problem?" From the easygoing tone in Strathmore's voice, nobody would ever have guessed his world was falling in around him. He stepped aside and ushered Chartruckian into the sacred walls of Node 3. The SysSec stepped over the threshold hesitantly, like a well-trained dog that knew better. From the puzzled look on Chartruckian's face, it was obvious he'd never seen the inside of this place. Whatever had been the source of his panic was momentarily forgotten. He surveyed the plush interior, the line of private terminals, the couches, the bookshelves, the soft lighting. When his gaze fell on the reigning queen of crypto, Susan Fletcher, he quickly looked away. Susan intimidated the hell out of him. Her mind worked on a different plane. She was unsettlingly beautiful, and his words always seemed to get jumbled around her. Susan's unassuming air made it even worse. "What seems to be the problem, Phil?" Strathmore said, opening the refrigerator. "Drink?" No, thank you, sir." He seemed tongue-tied, not sure he was truly welcome. "Sir, I think there's a problem with Translator." Strathmore closed the refrigerator and looked at Chartruckian casually. "You mean the run monitor?" Chartruckian looked shocked. "You mean you've seen it?" "Sure. It's running at about 16 hours, if I'm not mistaken." Chartruckian seemed puzzled. "Yes, sir, 16 hours. But that's not all, sir. I ran a virus probe, and it's turning up some pretty strange stuff." "Really?" Strathmore seemed unconcerned. "What kind of stuff?" Susan watched, impressed with the commander's performance. Chartruckian stumbled on. "Translator's processing something very advanced. The filters have never seen anything like it. I'm afraid Translator may have some sort of virus." "A virus?" Strathmore chuckled with just a hint of condescension. "Phil, I appreciate your concern, I really do. But Ms. Fletcher and I are running a new diagnostic, some very advanced stuff. I would have alerted you to it, but I wasn't aware you were on duty today." The sysec did his best to cover gracefully. "I switched with the new guy. I took his weekend shift." Strathmore's eyes narrowed. "That's odd. I spoke to him last night. I told him not to come in. He said nothing about switching shifts." Chartruckian felt a knot rise in his throat. There was a tense silence. "Well," Strathmore finally sighed, "sounds like an unfortunate mix-up." He put a hand on the sysec's shoulder and led him toward the door. "The good news is you don't have to stay. Miss Fletcher and I will be here all day. We'll hold the fort. You just enjoy your weekend." Chartruckian was hesitant. "Commander, I really think we should check the..." "Phil," Strathmore repeated a little more sternly, "translator is fine. If your probe saw something strange, it's because we put it there. Now, if you don't mind..." Strathmore trailed off, and the sysec understood. His time was up. "A diagnostic, my ass," Chartruckian muttered as he fumed back into the sysec lab. "What kind of looping function keeps 3 million processors busy for 16 hours? Chartruckian wondered if he should call the sysec supervisor. "Goddamn cryptographers," he thought. "They just don't understand security." The oath Chartruckian had taken when he joined sysec began running through his head. He had sworn to use his expertise, training, and instinct to protect the NSA's multi-billion-dollar investment. "Instinct," he said defiantly. "It doesn't take a psychic to know this isn't any goddamn diagnostic." Defiantly, Chartruckian strode over to the terminal and fired up Translator's complete array of system assessment software. "Your baby's in trouble, Commander," he grumbled. "You don't trust instinct? I'll get you proof." Chapter 20 La Clinica de Salud Pública was actually a converted elementary school and didn't much resemble a hospital at all. It was a long, one-story brick building with huge windows and a rusted swing set out back. Becker headed up the crumbling steps. Inside, it was dark and noisy. The waiting room was a line of folding metal chairs that ran the entire length of a long, narrow corridor. A cardboard sign on a sawhorse read, "Oficina," with an arrow pointing down the hall. Becker walked the dimly lit corridor. It was like some sort of eerie set conjured up for a Hollywood horror flick. The air smelled of urine. The lights at the far end were blown out, and the last 40 or 50 feet revealed nothing but muted silhouettes. A bleeding woman. A young couple crying. A little girl praying. Becker reached the end of the darkened hall. The door to his left was slightly ajar, and he pushed it open. It was entirely empty except for an old, withered woman, naked on a cot, struggling with her bedpan. "Lovely," Becker groaned. He closed the door. "Where the hell is the office?" Around a small dog leg in the hall, Becker heard voices. He followed the sound and arrived at a translucent glass door that sounded as if a brawl were going on behind it. Reluctantly, Becker pushed the door open. The office. Mayhem. Just as he'd feared. The line was about 10 people deep, everyone pushing and shouting. Spain was not known for its efficiency, and Becker knew he could be there all night waiting for discharge info on the Canadian. There was only one secretary behind the desk, and she was fending off disgruntled patients. Becker stood in the doorway a moment and pondered his options. There was a better way. "Con permiso," an orderly shouted. A fast-rolling gurney sailed by. Becker spun out of the way and called after the orderly, "Donde está el teléfono?" Without breaking his stride, the man pointed to a set of double doors and disappeared around the corner. Becker walked over to the doors and pushed his way through. The room before him was enormous, an old gymnasium.